Concession number 16427, Major Thomas Ward, Reel 7.
Major Ward, Reel 7. You mentioned that the brigade was deployed to defend beaches on the south coast of England from invasion. Could you tell me a bit more about that deployment, about the extent of the brigade's area of responsibility?
I know it was 45 miles. I also know that the brigade only had 3 machine guns, believe it or not.
For the whole brigade?
Yes. And so we were defending that tremendous strip of coast with rifles. No doubt there was artillery available if it was necessary, but after all, most of that had been left in France, and that had to be replaced. So this was a very critical period, and we must give a lot of credit to the Air Force for doing a magnificent job in defending, and eventually the Battle of Britain were defeating. It was really the first success the British forces had had was the Battle of Britain, really, apart from some naval actions. But the army so far, it has been nothing but disaster, really. Not entirely their fault, because we were not hadn't got sufficient equipment to defend ourselves.
Do you remember how the brigade was deployed? What sort of positions it occupied?
We had a headquarters in Broadstone near Poole, near Bournemouth. That was quite a useful position, because we could nip off to the battalions. And I did much of this with Brigadier Bastow. And in fact, I had a motorbike at the time, and he suggested that I should go and reconnoitre certain points and so on myself. And I did that. That was good practice. And I remember going off, especially to Corfe Castle, which was the limit of our area along the coast. So I think that started at Weymouth or at Christchurch. And it was quite a stretch. And it sounds ridiculous to really even consider defending a coast and with a brigade with such a long coastline and that frontage, but there was no option. Every unit which had been involved in France, they were licking their wounds and reforming and recruiting, from other. And our battalions over this period were gradually strengthened in manpower, and it was a period of consolidation, really. But what a period. I mean, everybody was very anxious. I mean, if the Germans had come over at that time, it would have been very serious indeed. I don't think everybody really realised the situation.
Did you have all 3 battalions actually on the coast, or did you have one back as a reserve battalion?
Well, they kept changing, I think. I just don't remember those details, but now we were under 5 Corps, and we were in 50 Div then. Tyne-T's, the TT's, we had another badge on our shoulder, the TT badge, and became very proud of it. And well, the was still the Greenhouse, it was still the East Yorkshire, 5th Battalion East Yorkshire, and the DLIs. And so it was North East, still together.
Did the new soldiers who arrived all come from the original recruiting areas?
I frankly don't know that detail, no. So, I think, for instance, there were some survivors from the other brigades which fought in France, and some of the battalions got an awful battering, and I think I'm right in saying that some of them ceased to exist after that. But whoever was left were posted to reinforce other units. I do know that the 5th East Yorks eventually had some Green Howards in the battalion and that kind of thing. And this happened throughout the war. Although the one knew most of the officers and everything, the beginning of the war in the 5th East Yorks and the Green Howards, it kept changing because of casualties or illness or whatever. But and then new recruits came in, and but there was still very good fighters throughout, and I was proud to be with them all.
When you were in your headquarters near Poole, what sort of establishment was it in? Was it in a building?
It was in a private house. Yes, a detached house. It was just big enough to accommodate the staff and everything. And the other ranks were billeted in the general area.
What means of communication did you have with the battalions and back to division?
Well, the usual at the time, with a single signals unit and so on, but a lot of it was with on the ordinary telephone
system. Civilian telephone network.
Yeah.
Did you actually go down onto the beaches and look at them to assess their...
Oh yes, we kept visiting the coastlines and so on, but each battalion had a task, and a lot of wire was established on the beaches, and pillboxes were starting to be erected on vulnerable points and peninsulas and so on. And that also applied to the coast of East Yorkshire up here, because the beaches were very suitable for landings, and the cliffs were not very high from along from Scarborough to back by Bridlington to Hornsey and to Spurn Point. So there was great concern about landing, and there were tank track traps, big boulders placed on the bottom of the cliffs and so on. It was never necessary to use them, but it was a deterrent, I think, that might have happened.
Did you have any means of direct liaison with armour, artillery in your area from brigade?
Not really. It was mostly infantry training this. We were, licking our wounds, and we needed a period of several months to get ourselves established into a fighting unit again. Now, we were in 5 Corps, and under General Montgomery. So it proved later on, we didn't know at the course of the time, that he was a real go-getter, and he was a disciplinarian, which was good for us.
You mentioned earlier on that he ordered officers in the brigade to go on runs to improve their fitness. That's something on which he was keen all through his life. Were there any other innovations that he produced while you were in 5th Corps that you can remember? Any changes in training, for example, or equipment or anything of that sort?
Well, I don't know if there were changes in training, because we'd only just joined 5th Corps. But all this was very new. We'd only been in the army for a few months, really, hadn't we? And we're talking about 6 months after the war started, or just a bit more, when there was no training whatsoever. So it was all from scratch, really, wasn't it?
And did you take part in any large-scale exercises before?
Oh, yes.
Having orders to go abroad?
Yes.
What did you do on those exercises?
Well, I remember operating not on a war footing, but we couldn't, because we didn't have supporting arms. But it was a practice of communications and that kind of thing.
Command post exercises.
Yes, and also, alerting the forward troops of the dangers and that kind of thing.
Speaking of the of dangers, you were still brigade intelligence officer.
Yes.
Did you get any information about Operation Sea Lion?
We got all that kind of information. That really didn't affect us very much, did it? Really, we were not ready for anything. Yes, it all came through the War Office and through division and so on, through Corps and through division, and then to us. We passed on whatever was necessary to the battalions. But I remember the period as a useful, partly relaxation after what had happened, and then feeling our feet again and gaining strength in reinforcements. I think that was the way to describe it. And getting ready to go to the Middle East. That's what we were destined to do. That we knew that.
How early did you know that?
Oh, I would think about about 2 months before we went. And just remembering that.
How did you go about preparing for the Middle East? What did you have to do?
Well, nothing much different, really. There were some briefings on this, and I attended the meetings on policy and that kind of thing. And we passed this on to the battalions, and I can't remember anything really unusual about the. There was no panic about it, but there was an urgency. There was an urgency because there was something definite to do again, and we knew that. Of course, we were following the. The battle in the Western Desert, which went up and down many times, didn't it? And General Wavell was doing very well indeed against the Italians, but with it seemed a handful of men, they did extremely, extremely well, I'm sure. And I'm sure generals like Montgomery must have learned a lot from that. And I know that General Montgomery learnt one very important thing about the desert warfare, and that was don't overstretch. Don't go too fast to make the lines of communication too stretched. That was disaster. And that's why Monty, from the very beginning, was determined to sit where he was until he was ready to go. But Wavell never had that option. I wasn't with him, but I'm sure that was the case.
Now, you mentioned that, very sadly, Brigadier Barstow died and was replaced by Brigadier Erskine. Could you compare the two men and say something about how, you know, they worked and commanded the brigade?
Yes, they were very different. Both delightful officers, I found. Brigadier Barstow was from the War Office. I don't know much about his background, but he'd had an office job. And, of course, coming into command a brigade is very different. Now, I thought he did it very well. But it was only commanding a brigade when we were reforming and so on. He was a good administrator, put it that way, because he'd had that experience. I think he was the right man for the job, really.
Good staff
at the time. Yes, at the time. And we were terribly upset when he died. We can't say it was due to the cross-country running, but he seemed to be very fit before we did that.
Do you know what the cause of death was?
No, not really. General Erskine had battle experience. I can't remember really where that was, but he was obviously a very experienced brigadier, vastly different to Viscount Down, who was just a territorial. But Brigadier Erskine was a regular soldier of many years, and you could tell the way he handled the situation and the troops and the battalions. He was commanding them before this didn't happen. It was left to the battalions to fend for themselves, really.
So with
the odd visit. I'm talking about Viscount Down.
Yes.
The odd visit, that's not sufficient. You need to be commanding your battalion commanders. But that, in my opinion, never happened with him because he didn't have the necessary experience and so on. But that, to me, then was history. He'd gone and we had a new commander. And I was very fortunate to go overseas with him.
When the brigade moved up to the Clyde to embark for the Middle East, was it at full strength and was it fully equipped?
We were only involved with the infantry. RAOC units and REMI unit and so on. We had a Royal Engineer unit, of course, to support us. But the movement was mainly the movement of three battalions.
And were they up to strength?
More or less out thing, more or less.
And by that time, had they got the full complement of weapons and equipment?
Well, we had some machine guns. The officers had revolvers for the first time. Of course, the soldiers had their rifles, but there were mortars and anti-tank guns. Not fully equipped, but it was really better, and of course that raised the morale that, you know, something had been done. A lot of effort had been put into to equip us properly before going to the Middle East. After all, we were going to meet the Germans, weren't we? The object of going to the Middle East was to stop the Germans getting to Cairo, really, or get into the Middle East, and it looked very dangerous at the time, and had very few troops there, and they needed reinforcing. But we didn't go into the Western Desert straight away, I'll tell you about that.
How did you get out to Egypt?
I went on the Multan from, regular soldiers remembered that because they'd been on it before.
It was a trooper then?
It was a trooper, yes. It had one funnel shorter than the other. And we had the HMS Birmingham escorting us as far as the equator. And we didn't have any problems, really. But we called in at Sierra Leone for 3 days. And we were just in the harbour at Freetown. They wouldn't allow us to go off the ship. And took on fresh supplies and so on, and then made our way to the Cape in South Africa without an escort.
Did you have any alarms about submarines or aircraft, enemy aircraft on the way?
Not to our knowledge, really. I suppose the naval people might have had, but we didn't. They didn't get alarmed, I don't think. But we were felt comfortable with the Birmingham nearby, but that left us eventually.
Were you part of a convoy, or was it the Multan just with the Birmingham as escort?
We had one or two other ships. But not past the equator. I think we were by ourselves, really. Then we went round the Cape and went to Durban, where the South Africans met us and made us very welcome. We stayed there 3 or 4 days, and then made our way up to the Red Sea. I think we all slept all the time, so we hadn't had much sleep in Durban. And they went to Ismailia and all got jippy tummy.
Was that your first impression of Egypt, getting jippy tummy?
Yes. Everybody got it. Very unpleasant. We assembled there, and as a brigade, and then it was feared that as the Germans were focusing their attention onto Greece and Crete, Cyprus might be attacked, because Germans were using paratroops. So it was decided that we would go over to Cyprus as a brigade to defend the island.
This was in August 1941, wasn't it?
Yes, it would be about that, yes. We spent just about 3 months in Cyprus.
What were you actually doing when you were there?
The brigade headquarters at Limassol. The battalions were allocated certain areas for defending. But as a brigade headquarters, we didn't have very much to do. What I remember was we got up at 6 o'clock, went onto the beach, and had some wonderful bathing in absolute clear water. And I got a very bad knee. It went septic, and it was a bit of trouble, actually. But
how did you manage to pick that up? Do you know how
I don't know.
It started?
I think a bite, perhaps.
A bite, an insect bite?
I would think so. It was behind, well, not the knee, it was behind the...
Behind the left knee?
Yes. And, well, the medical people did their best. And then I got friendly with the manager of Cable and Wireless at Limassol. He told me about a very good doctor. It turned out to be a German, believe it or not. And he thought he would know what he was doing because of this trouble. So I consulted our MO, and I think he gave me permission to go and see this fellow, because it was getting pretty bad. And he cured it. Can't remember how, but it gradually got better.
Did he speak English as German?
Oh, yes. I didn't know he was a German at the time.
You found that out later?
Mm. But... very nice fellow.
How did you get on with the local civil population in Cyprus?
Oh, very well, yes. In fact, I was lucky to meet this... Stiliano, his name, this manager of Cable and Wireless. He had a very nice family, and... we spent many happy times together. And after the war, when we lived in Bridlington, I invited them over, and they spent a nice holiday with us at our expense. It was very nice. And since I've never missed exchanging Christmas cards, and we once, as a family, had a cruise in the Mediterranean and called at Limassol, so called to see him. He was then 80, and he must be, in fact, I haven't heard from him this year, this Christmas, and I just wondered what, if anything had happened, but he'd lost his wife, and he had a bookshop, as well as, he retired, of course, from the Cable and Wireless, but he had a very nice bookshop in Limassol. But it was nice to call and see him. He was very surprised to... he didn't know I was going to call. And I took Ruth, and very pleased that he'd seen me again. So we had him over.
Did the brigade or the battalions do any serious training while they were in Cyprus?
Well, I suppose so, yes, but it wasn't really they concentrated on defending the vulnerable points, but I think really it was just getting used to the Middle East and the atmosphere, and getting rid of this jiffy tummy we'd got in Ismailia.
I think you relieved the 5th Indian Division. Did you see anything of them before
no.
they went?
No.
Did you have any high-ranking visitors while you were on the island?
No, I don't remember any. Now, from there, we went up to Syria. It was then Syria. And I remember...
How did you get there?
The transport.
I mean, how did you get there?
We went from Cyprus to Haifa, I think it was, yes, and then up.
Did you have any briefings about the political situation in Palestine while you were
en route? Yes.
Do you remember what they told you about that?
I can't remember. We were told to be alert.
Did you get involved in any internal security duties at all in Haifa while you were?
No, I went straight through.
You just straight through. Yeah.
No, we went up to near Baalbek. Which is of considerable interest, looking around the ruins and everything. The Bakar Valley, wasn't it? And of course, since the war, we've heard about the terrorism there and so on, the valley and so on.
What was going on there when you went through? Anything?
Nothing.
Of particular interest.
Nothing of particular interest. I remember that then we were told about the possible trouble in the Caucasus.